This is Edge Cases, a podcast about the grumpier side of software development, mostly, but not always, Apple-related, featuring myself and my co-host, the Thelma and Luis of Objective-C. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Will French.
This is episode 42. It's Sunday, March 24th, 2013. And our topic this week is native versus web.
Oh, wow. The big one coming.
Well, or at least my take on native versus web. Of course, that's pretty much always the case, I suppose. I wouldn't be telling anyone else's take on native versus web.
You could.
I could, but that would require more research than I'm willing to do.
So, oh, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so do you have any follow-up?
Yeah, didn't we already do Thelma and Louise? It feels like we already did Thelma and Louise.
Did we? Oh, no. Well, that would suck.
I don't really know.
I do write them down.
Okay.
Because if I don't write down the intro, I am probably going to screw it up. And I don't find it. I'm not searching through my document. I didn't find it before.
It's probably just me.
It could be. It
usually is.
I was going to stop myself from saying it.
I'll do your dirty work for you.
Okay. So was that your feedback then?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. No, I've still got a decent list. I've actually had some listener feedback to the extent of, you know, hey, are you running out? You know, should we be worried? No, we shouldn't be worried, at least not yet.
Okay. So we haven't reached peak tuple yet?
Well, we have in the sense that I made up a list a long time ago, and we are going through them one by one, but we're not near the end of it just yet.
Okay.
I've got a cat crawling over my lap at this point. I mean, two of them. They're not making noise, but they're still causing problems. Anyway, moving on. Okay, so the start of this topic was the recent Google announcement that they were going to be discontinuing the Reader service.
Right.
And so you heard about this, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to put a link to the post from Google's weblog about that.
Yeah, I actually was thinking about it because other shows were talking about it, and right. I realized how very non-topical we are, how we tend to just kind of plow ahead with what's in our own little minds versus what the outside world's feeding us. Because usually, like, the kind of analysis you get is from, you're pretty saturated in that. And so I feel the outside world does a pretty good job of kind of covering all the different angles, and that's not really our value add. But again, it looks like that you're going in a different direction to kind of like springboard this into web versus native. So
yes,
again, we're going in our own direction.
Yes, you don't need to analyze it before I've said it. You can analyze it after I've said it. So in any case, let's see. So as an aside from that, I would agree that. So I think Gruber said that it would take like the people who are trying to come up with their own service. To take the place of Google Reader, that the 3 to 4 months that they've given us is not that long to start your own alternative. Although I do have a good, I think there's a good chance that projects like the NetNewsWire, Black Pixels, they said something about how that they've been working on their own version of it. And then there's another one called Feed Wrangler that I've signed up for that also said, well, we're moving our project up because of this. I think those have a good chance of coming around. So that's as a developer, but then as a user, I actually, the people who kind of rush to go out to another service right away, I don't understand that. Because it is 3 months. Like, you've got 3 months to try to see how other people do on all these services. Like, I think I heard something about how, I think there's a service called NewsBlur.
Yeah.
Right? That a lot of people were joining so that they got, like, their servers crashed or something. Not sure if I have that story exactly right, but I think they were experiencing, you know, some slowdowns due to a lot of people joining it. And I'm thinking that's kind of crazy to do that, because I'm willing to wait and see. But in any case, back to the main thing. I think, and so another thing Gruber said was that, somebody said how they were a little puzzled that Google was shutting it down because there's so much information that they could get from you as a user, as to understand what kind of ads you should get by going through what you read. Now, of course, that's creepy, right? I don't really want them to do that, actually. And it reminds me that when NetNewsWire first started, they had their own syncing API.
Mm-hmm.
And then they switched to Google Reader at some point. And I remember resisting that. Like, I kept using the old version of NetNewsWire precisely so that I wouldn't unnecessarily be giving extra information to other people. But of course, eventually I gave in regardless, I suppose. So I'm not sure what the moral of that is for people having these services. But in any case, what was I going to say? Oh, so one thing that I was thinking was why they might have shut it down anyway is if the people, or if most of the people, the majority of the people who use Reader, even if they were gathering all this information about what ads to show them, what if they never went to a Google property that could show them ads?
Right.
And that's the same thing. That's what happens with me is that there are sometimes when I'll go to the Google website, but most of the time I really like getting Google's information through native applications.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if that's the same, that's probably not the same for everyone, but if it's the same for enough people, then they might have said, well, yeah, we're spending all this time, we're using all this bandwidth to collect this information, and it's not getting us anywhere. So that was kind of a long-winded way to talk about to go into the topic of native applications versus web applications. And you know, to go through, like, why do I like native stuff? And so that's basically what this is going to be about. I'm not going to talk about, you know, I don't know, like Wolf, if this were your topic, I think you'd be talking about, you know, academic research and algorithms and all that. I mean, I'm just like, no, here's what I like. Let's try to figure it out. So let's see. So we can go back sort of the history of this sort of thing. Like, you remember when kind of the web first started to get popular, there were lots of calls for having everything be web oriented. Like the future of everything was going to be web applications, websites. Mm-hmm. And if you remember, this was around, you know, 95, 96, when Apple was dying.
Mm-hmm.
Is it dying again yet? Or do we know?
I have this, a friend who claims that Apple's relationship with the press is binary and operates in either cursed or charmed mode.
Right.
And I think Apple has left charmed mode. The bit hasn't been totally flipped to cursed mode yet, but the press does not seem to be too favorable to Apple nowadays.
Yeah, no. Well, right. Well, I think Apple still has its sort of captive reporters, I guess, mm-hmm. you call it, like the people that they can always go to for fawning coverage.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of them. Mm-hmm.
I think with Apple's current growth, it's kind of reached a point where I don't think Apple ever can really fully die. It's kind of like Microsoftian or IBM-ish, just in terms of the amount of marketing power they have, that even if they were to collapse, they just like go into a white dwarf or something.
A red dwarf.
A red dwarf.
Yes. So what was I talking about?
Oh, sorry.
Well, so back in the day, when the web was first getting started, you could see kind of Apple, in as much as they talked about it, they seemed to really welcome it because the idea was, well, if nobody's going to write apps for us anymore, which they weren't, then at least we can get most of the things that you just want to do through websites, and these websites will be reachable and usable from Mac computers, even if you know, Macs otherwise have a very tiny market share. And so that was, you know, that was like a lifeline for Apple at that point. And the second aside actually has to do with some of this, what you were just talking about, is, you know, Apple was not getting a lot of new development because of market share, because people thought it was dying. And one thing that I'm seeing a lot of recently, and I should probably just write a blog post about it, is a lot of Mac commentators, or Apple commentators, I guess you'd say anymore, they're kind of trying to say, well, market share doesn't matter, or at least giving some form of that, saying, well, it doesn't matter much. It's not a deciding factor. And so my little rant here is going to be that feels a lot like the kind of rationalizing people did when Apple didn't have a large screened device. Mm-hmm. It seems like rationalization with as much of it as is going on. The idea that you can say, like, it doesn't matter, or it doesn't matter now, or whatever, like, that's bull. Like, if Apple were to go below a certain percentage of the market, developers would just stop writing for it. They'd stop writing for it first. And when you run out of market share, when your market share goes down past a certain amount, it's very hard to recover. Like the Mac, like what is it? Apple has been boasting that Mac, what is it? Mac sales are better percentage-wise every quarter than PC sales, something like that. They've been saying that for years and years and years. And still, what is their market share? Like, what? I mean, it's still below 10%, right? I should have looked that up. But it's certainly no, you know, it's not like they've gotten up to 20% or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you lose out, if you go down, you know, low single digits, you're toast. You know, you can't get back up to where you were before. And while Apple may have let itself get to that point for Macs because of short-sightedness as a company, I don't think too many people would argue today that Apple's management structure is short-sighted in that regard. Like, you know, I think there's, well, I can't imagine anyway that they would just be saying, yeah, you know, market share doesn't matter, because they know that it does. And they know that, and they want to get more themselves. So, you know, for me, every quarter that Apple is not gaining significant market share in the phone market is another quarter that they're failing at it. And, you know, as you said, like, they're not going to die right away. But to try to brush it off and say, well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because Apple doesn't have it, is I get annoyed with that anyway, because it does matter. And it matters for developer mindshare. It matters for who's going to build what. And also because I think, how would I phrase it? I would say that Apple's kind of addicted to it, because they're doing all of these things which are predicated on developers having nowhere else to go. You know, the way they treat developers, like if they get down to single digit market share for iPhone and developers start saying, well, you know, it's not worth it anymore to go through all these hoops when I can go somewhere else and do something better, and they only change when they're on their way down, that's just going to suck. So in any case, I suppose that's enough asides when I still have to actually start talking about the main event. So let's get going. Well, but one thing is, like, now you don't really have to worry about that so much. Like for iOS, there are a lot of native applications. You don't have to have websites to do everything that you're going to do. So it gives you a chance to sort of talk about that a little more. Now, let's see. So I've said that that I would use native applications over websites. And I want to talk about why that is. See if we can figure out why that is. And I'm going to start. I'm going to have a couple of examples that I want to talk about. I want to talk about Gmail. And if we have time, we're going to talk about IMDb and Yelp.
Okay.
And so the idea here being, I can get to that same information either from a native application or from the web. And how are those different? So what I tried, I spent most of my time on looking at Gmail. And there are three main cases that we can do here. One is the browser. And I looked at it on the Mac and the iPhone and the iPad. And then the Gmail application, which is on the iPhone and the iPad. I guess I don't think there is one for Mac. I should probably look that up. I didn't try to find it anyway. And then Apple's mail application. And so when you first try to log in to Gmail in all three places, when I looked at it on the Mac and on the iPad, there's certainly the UI to log in. There's the, you know, username and password. But there's also, for the larger screens, for the iPad and for the Mac, there's also a bunch of text kind of hawking Gmail features. And there's a bunch of little tiny links to various things. Now, on the iPhone, it's the same general UI, but there's no room for the extra text. So they just show the username and password and some buttons. So it looks more like a regular application, even when you're looking at the website. But the extra sort of adornment, the extra custom nature of things is still present. Like the sign up button is this red custom button, and the sign in button is a blue custom button. And even the stay signed in checkbox is custom because it's a checkbox. And of course, iOS doesn't actually have its own native checkbox UI, so they had to make that up. And it's all custom. It's a custom layout and a custom setup. And so why do they do this on the website? Why don't they just use regular UI? And I think it's there to be inviting. Like, especially on the Mac and on the iPad versions, there's enough text there that if they didn't have some way to make their login stuff stand out more than standard controls would do. Like, you'd see them eventually, I suppose, but they want them to stand out. So that's why they make the buttons these bright primary colors. And also, like, they have all these extra things that you can do. So there's a can't access link. And if you click that, you get, like, you know, hey, have you forgotten your password? Have you done all this other stuff? And I think that's actually the only other extra thing that's on the iPhone version of the web page. And it's good, right? Because it gives you what you need to do there. It's equivalent to, like, being the only object in a room in a text adventure game. To have a little callback to our episode 38. And what's interesting, but it doesn't feel like an application. It has a very different feel to it. Now, what's interesting to me is when I go to the Gmail application, it's actually the same UI. We're basically being shown a web page. And I think in that case, both on the iPhone and the iPad, it's the iPhone web page. So they don't have all the extra text. So they pared it down a little to make the application out of it. But it's still that web page. And that doesn't really work for me. And so why doesn't it work for me? Well, I was trying to think about it. Is it saying, well, maybe it's the difference between like a page, like a web page versus a window. Like the kind of page that you get in web applications, it's, as I said, it's a kind of completely free form. Like things can go anywhere. It's like a painter's canvas. And then each different page is a different canvas. It's a different thing. And what was the other thing? Have you heard of a decoupage, Wolf?
Is that like a gazpacho?
No, it's not edible. And I actually should have looked this up to be sure I get the details right. What I believe it is you know, take items, like what I've seen is like little boxes and things, and you kind of, I'm going to get this wrong, like it's like painting things on it and like adding things to it so that you sort of decorate it in a way there's a specific style to it. But the interesting thing about it is that you can sort of put anything you want on it, like stuff from newspapers or whatever, and it's just like you just throw a whole bunch of stuff on it, and you kind of attach it somehow. I'm going to get this all wrong. Our 3-day coupage people on the listeners, please email somebody else. But you know, the interesting thing is that, again, it's just kind of all sorts of stuff. There's no real form that it necessarily has to take. And especially reminds me of that with like the way people throw links everywhere on web pages. You know, just maybe in the upper right corner, in the upper left corner, in the middle, in the bottom. They're just everywhere. Whereas when you think of a window for a native application, there's always more structure than that. It's always a series of rectangles filled up with controls. Not always, but that's a lot of what you see. You know, on iOS, it's usually a table. There's usually a table involved somewhere. Always tables. And most of the time, it's the standard table UI. You know, so maybe it's not, maybe there are custom things inside of each row. The controls for each row are a little custom. But like scrolling is always the same. And the little thumb you see, little thumb that shows up. It's not a thumb like on the Mac, but it's something that's pretty standard. Pretty much everybody uses it. And like how deletion works, everybody generally, well, okay, you can swipe to the left or to the right to show the little delete button. And what's interesting, I actually had to do a little bit of this recently at work, do a little bit of this in a custom implementation. Like that behavior is not simple. Like it may look simple, but like, you know, for example, if you swipe to the right in a table and you show that little remove button, like that entire table is now in this special mode. Like you may think, well, I'm just showing a button, but it's really in the special mode where if you try to scroll or swipe or tap anywhere else, it makes the button disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And reproducing that is actually not that easy with standard standard APIs. But when you see that behavior, when your mind sees, well, here's what happens when I do certain things or when I look at things a certain way, that's reassuring. And it feels like kind of it's like a bedrock, like a foundation for a house. as opposed to freeform canvas. Now, what's interesting is the third case for Apple Mail. Apple Mail is so strict in what it shows on the screen that they don't even have a login page. Like, the login page is somewhere else because Mail is just for showing you mail. Although, actually, that's not the only reason they do it. Like, I think logging in for Mail, like setting up your Mail account, is in settings because you can send mail from any application,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So they don't want to just have you set it in one application. They want to have you set it for many applications at once. But even then, like, they could have said, well, yes, it's in many applications, but the place you'd think to sign up for a Mail account is Mail. So why not give you, like, even a little link at the bottom or a little splash screen which says, hey, do you want to sign up for any accounts? No. What you see in Mail is just, you know, this the list of your Mail accounts. And if you click on one of those, then you go to see that data for the Mail account. It's not freeform at all. Alrighty, so let's see a little further. Okay, so when you actually load your mail, this is actually the point where I think really the killer detail in this. So, and you load your mail after you've logged in on the Gmail browser interface. Like on the Mac, for example, it shows you a little progress indicator on an otherwise blank white page. In iOS, there's something a little similar to that. And even the Gmail application shows, like, this custom UI for a while. Like, it'll show a little loading thing, and then it'll show your avatar as soon as it has that, and then it'll, you know, wait a couple more seconds, and then it'll load your data. Like, in both of these cases, again, it's this kind of, it's not just one painting, it's like one painting after another, like a series of kind of unconnected paintings. Because, you know, the loading indicator is not in some piece of the UI that's there already. It's entirely separate. And again, it makes sense if you're looking at the whole user experience there. Like, you're saying, well, we need to kind of keep your attention for this. We need to make sure you know that it's loading. But if you were to see the same thing in, like, Apple Mail, for example, you see the list UI, and then you see the stuff that's loading in it afterwards. So the UI is stable, is fixed, and it's also immediate. Like, if you wanted to, say, do something else, like go to a different account or something from Gmail, like, you can't do that while it's loading. Because they've decided that showing you something which is much more of a something that stands out is more important than giving you the options that you would normally have in the UI. Whereas in Apple Mail, it's kind of the opposite. We want to let you interact with the application regardless of the state of the data being loaded. I think that's actually, that's you know, if you come down to it, I think that's really kind of it. Like, I like being able to know that the apps are really responsive to me. I like knowing where I am at any one point when I'm using an application. And with a browser-based application, or even with a Gmail application, which is not quite a browser, but not quite all the way to fixed UI, you don't have that. So you're always a bit, you can be at least a little adrift with that. Let's see. So that was the one reason. So yeah, it's responsiveness. And it may be, and again, a lot of that might be perceived. Like, maybe in Apple Mail, I can't actually get things done any faster than I would with Gmail. Actually, it makes sense, right? Because they're both loading data from Gmail. But it feels better. It feels more responsive. And especially on the iPhone and the iPad, like, that feel, that sense of things being kind of sharp and responsive and in your control, I think it's something that Apple has really tried to make the rule rather than the exception. I also think that, especially with the Gmail application, since they're using kind of very custom controls, like, everything's very flat. And so I think they're doing pretty much most of the drawing themselves, and it might all actually be HTML. you compare that against the iOS standard widgets, like even just the like, you know, Mail doesn't have a lot of widgets, but they what they do have is, you know, just the title bar or the navigation bar, for example. And when you're going back and forth between things, like, and Wolf, again, you probably know this, but the amount of things that happen when you click a back button in a navigation bar, in terms of what the content of that navigation bar does, it's actually a bunch of things that happen. Like, some buttons will move, and some text will, you know, the old text will disappear, and the new text will fade in. And, you know, it's all this stuff that Apple's had a lot of chance to kind of polish and make look really good, really satisfying. Mm-hmm. And when you're not using the standard widgets, you generally can't do that. Like, transitions for the Gmail, even for the Gmail application, are just much more abrupt and less pleasing, as far as I'm concerned. And the third thing, although this is actually less something that I'm sure of, but I'm going to throw it out there anyway, is I think there's less delineation of web content from the UI. So, you know, for example, with Mail, sometimes you're looking at HTML Mail, so it's got, you know, stylized text, pictures, everything else. And if the rest of your UI looks like a web page already, and then you're looking at what is basically a little web page inside of that, then it's a little harder to tell where one thing stops and where the other thing starts. Mm-hmm. And I don't necessarily like that either. So it's interesting. So I talked about, you know, rationalizing people kind of defending things because that's the way they are at Apple instead of that's the way they should be. And I did want to bring up that I am aware, and I kind of mentioned it for that reason, I am aware that maybe that's me too, right? Maybe the reason I'm saying, well, I like native more than the web stuff is because that is what I see. That is what Apple has produced right now. So I've just decided that that's what I like. So keep that in mind, but, you know. Actually, now that I've brought that up, I'm not quite sure how to respond to it, but it is an issue, and it's something that I'm aware of. And so what's interesting here is, you know, since the Gmail applications are really kind of half web, they're half man, half web, that I don't really like it as much. So even though it is a native application, it's not good enough for me. Like, when I look at Gmail, I want to do it in Apple Mail. I don't want to do it in their application. And it's kind of funny because they put this effort into making it. Now, maybe they didn't put that much effort into making it because maybe they didn't have to do very much. Maybe it's just mostly the web stuff. But I do kind of wonder why. And it's the same issue with Reader, that in the Gmail application, you don't see ads. So, you know, if your main thing were, well, I want to get away from ads, hey, Gmail's going to work for you for that. But then why did they do it? Did they just kind of drink the Kool-Aid that, you know, Apple was saying, ooh, you got to have a native app. You got to have a native app. And they said, oh, we got to have a native app, so we'll do it. But then what do they get out of it? Because they've got to figure that the way they're going to get you, the way they're going to show ads to you is when you go back to the website. So, all right. Well, if we go on to IMDb, in IMDb, the iOS app is really quite interesting. Again, it feels custom. The top of the iPad version, for example. Have you ever been to the IMDb application? Have you ever downloaded it?
No. Obviously, I've used the website, but I haven't actually used the app.
Yeah, it's interesting. So Gmail, obviously, you need an account, but IMDb, they'll let you wander around without having an account, although you can make one there. But so the top of the iPad app is this. It looks like it's a custom CoverFlow application. Custom implementation of CoverFlow. Like, I don't think there's a. Is there a widget actually for CoverFlow? I don't think there is. And even if there is, this looks like they made their own version of it. And underneath it, there's just a whole bunch of these horizontal lists for a variety of things. Let's see. Did I have a list? Coming soon, top news, trending TV, stuff like that. What's interesting is those lists are more or less standard tables. I mean, you can, you know, they're a sideways table. You scroll left and right, but they're still most good table. And so I think IMDb gets some of the benefit of having standard UI and UI that doesn't change. Like, it doesn't, you know, I opened the app a couple of times and it's not like they gave you a different list each time. They gave you a different architecture for the page. But it was interesting. So I mean, that helps, but it still doesn't give me the same kind of reassuring feeling that I get when I look at, like, Apple Mail. And let's see, why did I think that. Well, I think one of the reasons why is because they made the table so big that in order to get through the entirety of the UI, to get through everything that they wanted to show you, you actually have to scroll up or scroll down, whatever, push up the page to see all of it, which feels very much like a web page. And so it's kind of the worst of both worlds. Like, you get something which can't be as wildly freeform as a web page because it's all these standard controls listed one on top of each other. But you don't get that sense that it was geared to, it was designed for the screen as you see it. Because they just couldn't limit themselves to something that would just be on one screen. You have to scroll down, and it's like scrolling like basically a page or two to get down to everything. And I think the reason they thought they needed to do it was because, like, those lists, they're like little icons, and they're like people or movie trailer images, not in trailer, like movie poster images or whatever. Like, it feels to me like they thought, well, if these are too small, people won't be tempted to click them. So they had to make them big. But it just feels very web-like in terms of how they laid it out. And what's interesting is you should go to the IMDb for the iPhone application, and there they actually did make it a standard table. And you have to click sort of table rows to get to drill down to the data, the information. And I guess they kind of thought, well, for the phone, since we can't kind of tempt you with these pictures because there just isn't enough room, there we'll give you more of a standard implementation and make that work. But it was kind of, it was interesting for me that, you know, why did they do it like that? Why did they do it like that? And why don't I necessarily like it? Like, I would probably just go to their webpage. Like, the app doesn't give me enough of that sense of native permanence, whatever, to make it seem like a big step up from the webpage. Although I guess because it is standard controls, because they don't have a lot of extra crap in it, I guess it is still more compact than the website. But so, for example, like I tried to view a trailer on the application, and that was okay, although it has the usual Apple problem of it will happily start playing and then stop because it didn't quite get all the content in time. I've actually seen that quite a bit. But then the other thing that's weird is that you play the whole trailer and then say, oh, I want to play it again. Right? Right? And you go back to the beginning of it and then it has to load it again. And right, wow, man. That's another thing. Like, again, it seems like they're treating it like a web page in that respect as well, because for an application, I damn well expect you to cache things like that. But maybe they felt that that was too much of a risk. I don't know. So, all right. And then the last one was Yelp. Yelp is actually interesting because of how minimalist it is and how custom it is without really being custom. Like, basically, they took all those tinting capabilities that I think iOS has had for a couple of releases now, and they just went to town with it. Like, the title bar is like red, you know, because they're using like, you know, Yelp's brand. Did I say that right? Did a brand, right? the branding of Yelp, you know, is a bright red. And I think they even, like, the toolbar is obviously still a standard toolbar, but like, it doesn't have the gradient at all. It's a flat red. And I'm pretty sure you can do that pretty easily with the APIs as they exist. But the buttons are still gradient. It was kind of interesting. But it really felt, and there's only a couple of things on here. Like, there's basically a list of whatever you've searched for and then a map. And that actually felt pretty good. Like, it's hard to screw up a list, right? And it is, again, more compact, less distractions than the web page. It feels entirely native in that sense. I'm not even sure if it is, but it feels that way. And so, I mean, the main thing is I just don't use Yelp that much. Like, there's no way for them to kind of, like, it's not like it's not like Wikipedia or something where I'm just going to keep clicking links, you know, to stay in the application. I'm just going to look at it once and then go away. And actually there, you know, the real benefit of the website is that you don't have to pull out your iPad. Like, if you're on your Mac or something, you know, if you're looking at something else, like, it's just a lot easier to just stay where you are and go to the web page than to pull out your iPad and bring up the app. But So I'm actually, again, I'm not actually sure what the idea was there. Again, like for me in that case, like if I'm looking at a large piece of information, like looking at email, I'm scrolling through email, I'm going through Twitter, for example. Ooh, I didn't talk about Twitter. Then I want native for that ability to sort of go back and forth really quickly and look around, scan around a lot in my content. I guess that's the kind of thing that's happening with Yelp, is that I don't see enough of a benefit in the native controls to switch to an application for that. And again, there's no ads. Does Yelp have ads on it? I think it does. So again, they're not even getting the ads. So it would be interesting. It'd be interesting to talk to somebody who's involved in that and see, you know, what was their idea. But again, do we need a native app because Apple is pushing us to make a native app because we don't want to be afraid? It's defensive. Do we not want to lose those customers who will go to some other service if there's a native app for that other service? Like, I don't think that's really the way it works. But so possibly I've just confused myself more than after half an hour's worth of talking than I was before. But what do you think there, Wolf?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned ads, because that was basically kind of the first thing that popped into my mind when you talked about the differences between web and native. And it's deeper than that's whether or not show ads. So while you were talking about the IMDb app, I downloaded it on my iPad and fired it up. And it turns out the bottom of the IMDb app, at least when I first loaded it, it's not showing it now for some reason, there was a banner ad along the bottom.
Yeah.
And that felt actually very webbish to
me. Well, wait, was there an actual ad, or was there like a thing to take a survey?
Since it's already gone, I don't remember. But because it's an ad, it looked at enough that I mentally blocked it out. I didn't even bother looking at the content. I just recognized there was an ad there.
Wow, you're hardcore.
It's a Syracuse-style blindness where, you don't have to install ad block because your brain doesn't even look there. So it definitely felt like the web there.
Yeah, and, web-like. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of... points to kind of what I feel is a deeper issue, which is, iOS is still kind of the new kid on the block in terms of technology. And you'll remember that when the web was the new kid on the block, that it also wasn't littered with ads. And it's only as it grew in popularity that people figured out that it was a couple things. Number one, it grew in popularity, so there was incentive there to try and monetize it. And number two, as you know, HTML is very flexible in terms of composing things. So it wasn't technically difficult to kind of rearrange pages to put more and more stuff on there, be it navigation or ads. And I think you do a good job of pointing out that iOS, until very recently, had a poverty of design. And I mean, the design it had was very good, but you didn't have very many choices unless you wanted to go whole hog and redesign the world yourself. So that would be something like a game where you just, okay, I own the screen, I'm going to do everything myself. And that obviously there are apps that do that, but for the majority of business apps, you can't say, oh, I want to build my own widget toolkit just because. So you tend to be limited in where you can stash the ads and so forth. And of course, the iPhone screen itself is much more limited in screen real estate. So if you were to take away 25% of the page space and fill it with ads, you're like, oh, it's still readable because obviously desktop monitors, notebook monitors are larger. But take away 25% of a screen where you actually have to do work on. And once you pop up that virtual keyboard, you're lucky if you see a line of text. Because that's the thing. Is like the iPhone screen doesn't seem that small until you pop up that virtual keyboard where you actually do some text entry. And man, you're like, what's that Radio Shack or computer that was popular with journalists in the 80s that had that like one line of LCD readout? It was like a TRS-100 or something. But this was like the original ultralight notebook that ran for 2 weeks off 8 AA batteries or something.
Yeah, vaguely. Sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, we'll link to that if I can remember what the name of it is. But anyway, it's amazing. Like you have this. It reminded me of of this where it's like you have this very fancy phone, you know, as people like to say, I'm carrying a glass that's connected wirelessly to the world's knowledge store. And, you know, the iPhone is, and all smartphones are just amazing. But then when you actually go to enter text on them, you're down to this freaking one line of text. It's like Edlin.
Yeah.
But so, and because the web has had more time to mature and all that, there's been, you know, they've been putting ads in more and more places and all that. And that's why when I launched IMDb, it almost felt like the web circa 1999 or something, where there's this banner ad along the bottom. And of course, on the web, it tended to be along the top. But I suspect with the new advanced abilities, as people are doing fancier like UI collection view type layouts, and I suspect that the apps are just going to get more and more cluttered, and a lot of the kind of simplicity, at least on the iPad style UIs, a lot of the simplicity that we kind of take for granted are just going to be chiseled away at, just like all platforms are chiseled away at. And right now it's nice because iOS is the new kid on the block, is benefiting from that simplicity, where people are still trying to figure out how to jam their crap content in there.
Wow. Okay, that's an even more depressing outlook on things than I thought.
Well, I know you're kind of going around circles there, so I had to give you the pessimistic view so you knew where to go.
Well, it's interesting because when you talk about iPhone being new, I mean, iPhone's been out for 5 years, and you have people like Horace Dedue, you know, kind of saying, "Well, we're ready for the next big thing," because the what is it like? You know, the iPad was what's the thing? I'm not going to remember it exactly now, but he kind of said, "Well, this is the amount of time that the iPhone's been around is about as long as any platform kind of is at its peak." Before it starts to get eclipsed by other things. So, you know, 5 years is actually a long time. And so it strikes me that if they weren't able to find a way to cram ads in it already, it's been, you know, we're kind of past the experimentation phase, I think. Like, maybe not that much past it, but I think we're somewhat past it.
I think you have to factor in the fact that we're in a UI tar pit with the standard controls. It's really hard to move around.
Well, there's a title for you. Well, yes and no. I mean, what's interesting about Google's Gmail application is it is pretty much all custom. Right. And, you know, I don't necessarily like it because I don't think it does as good a job as the custom, as the native, the really native controls. There are bugs with it that you wouldn't see with a native control, for example. And it is not as nice, whatever. But it does strike me that if Google had wanted to put ads in Gmail, they could have done that in the Gmail application. For iPad, for example. So yeah. Why didn't they? I think it's got to be another reason beyond just they haven't gotten around to it yet. Because, you know, this is their lifeblood. It's putting ads and stuff.
Right.
I do think that the way around that, the way to do entirely custom UI that's still widgets, you know, that still gives you the same control, you know, being back and forth in lists and everything else, it was probably web-based widgets. And in some ways it is. I bet there are more apps out there already which have it. But yeah, I think the main thing is where to put the ads. And actually, you know what? You know, another part of it might be just the review process. I wonder if Google got grief if they tried to put ads into Gmail from Apple. Although you wouldn't think, because I've seen applications with ads in them. You know, little banner ads at the top, little tiny banner ads.
They rejected because they didn't use iAd.
Maybe.
I doubt that, but... It would be fun to think,
but I think I'm going to leave the door open here because I don't think it's just that that they haven't gotten around to cramming it in yet. And actually, you know, you say, well, they put ads everywhere, and yeah, it's totally true on web pages. Like I will read sometimes I'll read salon.com, and it's this they just go. I'm sure there are other websites to do this too, but like, you know, they just go so crazy with the ads. Like there are ads along the side and the bottom. Yeah. And then, you know, when you scroll up, another ad pops up over top of you.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, you know, just 2 seconds into opening the page, another ad pops up over top of you. And like, it's just, you know, it just reeks of this desperation of, oh my God, we can't find a way to make money with advertising without going this route, which is sad, which is, you know, it's too bad for those industries that they're in that kind of trouble. And then you turn around and then these other companies, which just say, oh, we'll give you a native app. Yeah, no problem. And I just sort of wonder what's going on. Is just Yelp so much more successful than other content sites that they can get away with this?
Well, I think you have a good point there. So you go to salon.com, and they have a, you know, they have a team of web designers and webmasters. And the type of publishing house that puts out an app, they tend to not have that type of talent in-house because, for number one, they frankly don't need it. Well, you could argue whether they need it, but they probably don't, actually.
I mean, you're right. Like they're paying for Salon is paying for content in a way that Yelp is not because Yelp gets it from users.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is that they have internal talent for doing the website, but chances are they don't have internal talent to do their app. So their app, especially with Apple's App Store iteration time, iterating on the app is significantly slower than iterating on the website. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the ad evolutions can go much faster, and they can do A/B testing, and you can do A/B testing on iOS apps as well. It's just more involved, and you have to be technically more advanced. And that's why I say that the web is this rich cell culture media where you can try out new evolutions of genes. And iOS is not, it's like that it's like permafrost on the side of a mountain. It's like it's a much harsher environment to survive in, and yes. So things are going to be a little slower growing there.
Evolution takes longer. Yeah, mm-hmm.
So I said it. 20 years from now, I think iOS might just be as junked up as the web is today, assuming it lasts 20 years.
Could be.
Yeah, of course, then also the web will have pulled ahead in junkiness too. So it might just always be worse.
God, can it get worse? Of course, it can get worse.
Of course.
Okay. All righty. So I'm not quite sure what picture we've gotten out of all of this, but.
Well, I realize this was a big topic, and this is some of the things I've written down while you were talking. You didn't get anywhere close to. So I think we're just going to. And this is good because this is actually a topic I wanted to talk to about as well. Mm, okay. So this can be kind of like a GTD thing where we cover it in multiple episodes, but apparently we'll have to tag team this large topic.
All right. Okay. So please visit our website, edgecasesshow.com, all one word, for show notes, a link to our podcast on iTunes, and more. And you can find us on, I didn't copy and paste this part. You can find us individually on Twitter, me, A. Pontius, APONTIOUS, and Wolf, his last name, Wrench. That's the word rent, RENT, plus Z, plus SCH. We'll see you next time.